This week, Governor Eric Holcomb celebrated the first anniversary of his inauguration by delivering an upbeat State of the State address in which he promised to cut Indiana's infant mortality rate, create thousands of new high-paying jobs, and train undereducated Hoosiers to thrive in the 21st century economy, a task he called the defining issue of the decade. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll sit down with the man who delivered the address in question, Indiana's 51st governor, Republican Eric Holcomb. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue researchers are at the top edge of computer technology, 3D design, using hand gestures, extending mobile battery life, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.
Eric Holcomb took office a year ago this week, capping one of the most unusual statewide campaigns anyone could remember. Just 6 months earlier, Holcomb wasn't even a long shot to win the race, largely because back then he wasn't even in the race. He was only a few months into his tenure as lieutenant governor when Donald Trump tapped Holcomb's boss, then-Governor Mike Pence, to be his running mate. After a frenzied campaign that lasted barely 100 days, Holcomb won the governor's office by 6 percentage points. A year into his term, the governor is riding relatively strong approval ratings among Hoosier voters. He's enjoying a seemingly positive relationship with the General Assembly, and he's preparing to spend the next half hour or so with me. As they say, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Eric Holcomb, welcome back to the show.
Great,
I appreciate your being here this week. I know it's been a busy one for you.
It has been, but my mother used to say, busy boys are better boys. So
we're keeps not going to
sit, we're not gonna sit around and be bored.
Well, I'm going to start with the same kind of incisive, trenchant comment that I began last year's interview. What's the coolest thing about being governor, now that you have a year under your belt?
Yeah, you get to, well, number one, my dog Henry, I should not just gloss over, has become somewhat of a child celebrity. He's going to need a psychiatrist when this is all said and done.
Is he as big as Butler Blue now, would you say?
He's trying. Okay. He may have a little insecurity complex going on with Butler Blue. But they talk. And you know, the coolest thing, honestly, is you get to get things done. And we've, as you mentioned, this was not a lot of lead time, so it was full steam ahead. We put together a great team. We're focused on the issues that matter, I believe, to Hoosier families and to the future of our state. And so we're getting things done, and that's fulfilling. And we're having, I tell the team, let's keep the fun in our function. This is going to go by fast as well. We have a lot to do. There should be a sense of urgency. We've hired good, honest, humble, hungry people, and we're focused on getting the job done for the very people that we serve.
So let me ask the flip side. What's the part where you thought to yourself, boy, if I'd known this was part of the job,
sure,
I might not have considered it after all. I mean, every good comes with some bad, I suppose.
Absolutely, and my eyes were wide open, but what has been surprising is all the reports come to you as they should. So no longer am I taking reports to someone, I'm receiving them, and you get the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's some darker sides to life out there, and there's some the opioid epidemic is just ripping families, communities, businesses apart, and you see that, and you hear those personal testimonies, and it just drives you to want to do more. And every day we run out of minutes, but we get up the next day, dust ourselves off and get at it again. We've got to reverse this trend.
Now, have you changed or grown? I looked down. In fact, when you walked in the studio, I looked down to see. I know I would have known that had the cowboy boots not been there, you would have undergone some transformation.
Right, extreme makeover.
Aside from the fact that we can see that those are still in place, how have you changed? How's the past year changed you?
Well, the schedule that I am now on is brought to me. So I don't get to say no to certain things because I'm not just representing the state, but there's a lot of issues that are unfolding around the state that need direct immediate attention. And every 5 minutes of the day, you're receiving new information about a different issue. It could be in Jackson County. It could be an overturned exploding semi on I-65 in Jackson County. Or it could be, you name it, in any part of the state. So you have to be able to react very, very quickly. But again, that goes back to the team. But I've always been very comfortable in my own skin, and I'm not going to change who I am, certainly. And I've always said that I wear my own clothes, the others don't fit. And that goes for my boots as well.
One of the things last year you were looking forward to, you said, was the relationship with Washington. You're the chief executive here, certainly, but
yes,
you're one of 50 when it comes to that other broader club. Yeah. But you thought you had an advantage, or the state of Indiana had an advantage, because, as we mentioned, Mike Pence now is in a position of some import as vice president. And as a matter of fact, a number of the people who now occupy positions of responsibility in the Trump-Pence administration, Seema Verma at Medicaid, Medicare centers, you have the Surgeon General out of the administration, a lot of familiar faces, a lot of people who probably you have already in your Rolodex. How has that borne fruit? Has Indiana gotten the leverage that you had hoped?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How? Give me an example.
You know, I ran into, we were on an Indiana Economic Development Corporation overseas trip in India. I literally ran into Ted McKinney, who used to run our State Department of Ag, and he was in the same hotel, this country the size of 1.3 billion people, and we were both there on different for different purposes, but I got to see him. The Surgeon General has come in. These folks are on our you know, cell phones, on our speed dials, and when we're reaching out, whether it has to do with the health care of our citizens or issues in the Department of Ag, or former Senator Dan Coats has run the Department of National Intelligence, we know who to contact, and those phone calls come back. So first month of office, I took a deep dive into East Chicago and the lead contamination. And we were able to, I think, kind of cut through the clutter as folks were staffing up. That is typically somewhat of a chaotic time as you're staffing up. But within the first month, we were able to have the attention of Health and Human Services, of the EPA, and we had people on the ground saying, how do we work together? How do we partner together in order to start to fix this problem? That's really paid off.
What's the holdup then, for instance, on the Healthy Indiana Plan 2.0? Now, you, back in July, I believe, an extension was required, a federal waiver. You have some new bells and whistles in there in terms of requiring, if this is approved, able-bodied adults to work.
Find meaningful employment.
Find meaningful employment, or at least try to.
That's right.
That's
exactly right.
That's July. You know, the calendar kind of. Yeah. This is where, if we had a graphic, we could have that little spinning calendar go by. You mentioned
it's in
that
my
even
head
in,
too.
The state of the state, you use the phrase eagerly awaiting.
Yes.
So if we have all this leverage as a state, what's the holdup?
It's not just us. They're looking at the whole country and multiple people who have applied for these type programs. In our case, this extension and waiver. I think the decision obviously is imminent soon, and I feel bullish about our prospects.
And would you say overall that the administration go ahead?
And by the way, it also includes some additional funding. You mentioned the helping Hoosiers find their way to meaningful employment,
or requiring them to,
or requiring, or requiring,
yeah, how you look
yeah,
at
yeah,
it,
yeah. Or requiring them to, absolutely. But it also will provide some additional funding for treatment to attack this opioid epidemic and get people to treatment, which is critically important. And so that's north of $55 million that we're eagerly awaiting. And the clock is, as you allude to, it's tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. But I believe soon. Very soon, we'll get some good news.
So you can say without hesitation that the state of Indiana is better off with the Trump
absolutely.
Administration?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
No question.
One thing that struck me the other night when you spoke, you talked about various components, the pillars, as you call them, of your plan, your proposals, the core proposals.
Yes.
You talked about civility and unifying, and you actually had a comment in there where you said, you know, none of these goals, these ambitious to-do lists, will remain elusive unless we can stay open to different points of view, treat each other with respect, and focused not on what divides us, but on what we have in common. E pluribus unum.
Yeah.
You know. Does that describe the Trump administration? Do you have a perspective that nobody else seems to have?
No, I think that we have a model here in Indiana that works. And others would be others, plural, would be well served if they followed that model, the e pluribus unum, out of many one. We have a lot of different ideas, and we don't agree on all of them. But I do believe, to a person in the General Assembly, that we believe on the goals. And so many ideas come into that building every year. Not all of them are successful. They change. But we come back to next year and the next year and the next year. And we have made so much progress. And just from my perspective, in my context, going back to 2005, we've made so much progress on the infrastructure front. We've made so much progress on the dialing in a strong and diversified economy. But the box that we really got to check is the health and wealth and wisdom levels of our people. And that's why that State of the State, this most recent one, the second one, is focused on people. We get that right. If we start to become top five in the country, or top two, or number one, on that front, Katie bar the door, no one can catch us. We're going to be way out in front. And we already are right now, but there's some work to be done. And that's what's exciting for me, is to be on this journey, to have a roadmap, and to be on this journey with the General Assembly that I'm working with.
You listed three terms, as I recall, that you said would be your priorities in the coming year. People, people, people.
That's it.
Sound like real estate.
Focus.
Location, location.
Yeah, that's exactly
location.
Right.
So before I get to the subject of state governance, I just want to make clear, you think, should Ms. Manners clip out this portion of your speech and take it to the White House and drop it off and say, I mean, is the president setting the kind of example that you're seeking to set here?
That is an environment that is somewhat foreign to me. And they, our nation's capital, would be well served if Eva Corr, the 2017 SACHM recipient, if they would host her and hear her story. I think it would inspire people to get focused on what's really important.
Holocaust survivor, one of
yes.
two people you cited at your address
yes.
the other evening as people who have set the right kind of example.
Exactly.
It seems to me, and this is not a novel thought, that one of the reasons that you are enjoying perhaps this relationship with the General Assembly, especially good even last year, first year as governor, is sort of atypical, and the high favorables among voters, is you haven't sought division. You haven't gone to the red meat, some of the traditional issues. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if you remembered what Mitch Daniels two times removed said about, let's push some of the social issues aside and tackle. Is that a fair observation? Is that part of a strategy? Or is that, cause some of your critics, let me say, in
yeah.
the context of
sure.
the other night, they
sure.
said, gee, he didn't mention anything about alcohol regulation. He didn't mention anything about legalizing marijuana.
Right.
Didn't mention anything about constitutional carry, which would, the notion of letting people carry
sure.
concealed handguns without any kind of permitting process. Is that intentional? Is that part of the plan here?
Well, it's intentional to be focused, and I can just tell you, it's. I think you're able to make so much more progress when you're very transparent about what your intentions are, and what you're going to be focused on. Absolutely, I'm going to work with lawmakers on issues that are important to them, and I have said over and over and over that my cell phone's on 24 hours a day. My door is wide open. And when legislators want to come down and talk to me about what's passionate, about what's on their heart or in their head, my ears and eyes are wide open, and I want to hear from them. But I'm going to be focused on the agenda that I got elected on, that I shared, that was informed by citizens. And those are, I don't want to, it's not rhetorical. Those are making sure we're doing everything we can to strengthen this economy and deliver good government and build up and out our infrastructure and make sure that we're getting people skilled up. That's our greatest asset. And that's what I'm going to be focused on. So it is deliberate to be focused. Everyone knows if something is important to them in that building, my door is wide open, and I want to talk to them about that.
And even though it's not on your formal agenda, none of the
right.
three issues I mentioned is among your pillars.
Right.
Chances are they're likely to occupy a lot of attention, if only because
sure.
media, they're sort of the
sure.
hot-button issues and are likely to get the attention. How much political capital are you willing to expend either to promote or to block those three, constitutional carry, legalized marijuana, types of issues?
Political capital is accumulated to be spent. I don't think it's accumulated to be saved, And so when something becomes important enough to where I am needed to weigh in, I'm going to. But as these issues evolve and morph and change, and some will go away, some don't have the support even inside the chamber that they're in. And so, like I said,
some are waiting federal action about whether it could change.
That's right.
That's with the handguns, for instance.
And so I tried to underscore the point that I'm focused on the issue of the decade. There may be issues that are important to people that are the issues of the day, and we've got plenty of time. Although this session moves by at a fast clip, we've got plenty of time to work through those. But look, again, I've got a pen. I will use the pen. I will not just telegraph. I will be very transparent about where I am on issues as I see them form up that are on other people's agenda. But time would be well spent if folks were convincing their own cohorts to advance their bills that are important to them right now.
So you mentioned that pen. You have it and you're willing to use it. Presumably legalized marijuana, and again, I'm not suggesting that any of these things necessarily are likely to see light of day at the end of the session, but that might be fodder for veto, I'm guessing. And what about constitutional carry?
Same thing. I'm focused, again, on my agenda, but I'll be very transparent about those bills. I've said that on legalizing marijuana, we had the Surgeon General step forward when he was actually right after he was in Indiana about a month ago. And he said this was a worthy subject to study. And I don't think we have all the data ready to make big decisions. However, I am and will work with the General Assembly on this issue. Sunday sales, I've said that...
Pens can be used to veto or to sign.
Yep, and I've said we need to modernize our alcohol laws.
So that would be likely
in our state. And so I'll use the pen and hopefully that uncertainty won't be there next year.
One thing you did mention, although, again, critics, we got to find something to criticize, and most of the speech, frankly, was sort of hard for critics to actually find. The first two-thirds, at least, was
pretty
hard
focused
for anybody to find anything other than apple pie, motherhood, brotherhood, and, you know, fill in the blank.
Sure.
But you talked about the Department of Child Services, which, of course, had been the subject of some controversy. You alluded to that.
Yeah.
Mary Beth Bonaventura, who had been the head of that, resigned with a bit of a flourish, saying that, in her estimation, hands had been tied, action had been taken that might jeopardize the lives of children. You've created engaged a consultant who's looked at a lot of these things around the state.
Yep.
Someone in the General Assembly said they wanted to be involved. Have you come to, where is that standing?
Well, they will be, and I'll communicate very soon to them as well. What I don't want this to become is a partisan issue. There's been some calls for bipartisanship. I want it to be nonpartisan. This is an issue where I want experts, as you said, to, and they are here already, last week when we started, I want the experts to come in that have done this around the country and bring me the good, the bad, the ugly, and give us the facts. And we're going to turn the cards face up. We're going to be very transparent. We're going to deal with this issue. What we know is the state of Indiana is spending a whole lot more money than all of our neighboring states that are dealing with the very same issues that we are. And so just on my watch, we've moved with the support of the General Assembly, by the way, we've moved over $500 million into the agency. So we have to make sure the systems are in place and the leadership is there. And I'm delighted and excited that Terry Stigdon is on board. She comes from Riley Hospital for Children. Mm-hmm. And with I called them in the state of the state, the big three, FSSA, with Dr. Wathel and Dr. Chris Box at the Department of Health, and Terry Stigdon now, all having this experience and a career working with children and mothers and families. This is quite the trio. And we're going to get the answers. The lawmakers are going to be involved in this process. I'm looking forward to updating them more than once before they adjourn. And so they'll be part of this, but I want to keep it nonpartisan, not partisan.
And you've indicated, I think this week, in fact, you were quoted as saying that if, depending on what comes out of the report, you would be very willing to convene a special session if action was in fact needed to fix the system.
I think that's premature. But if, I'm not going to rule out anything. What I do know is we're going to keep legislators up to date on our progress, on the outside experts, on their analysis, on their deep dive. And then we'll also have a full report when that's complete. And we're going to get to the bottom of this so that our children, our families are well served.
All right.
And taxpayers, buddy.
All right. Now we'll talk about something you want to talk about, workforce development. You said the other night in the speech that is the, and you said it again today, just a moment ago, that it is the defining issue of the decade,
not just the session, the decade.
And yet this is not a budget year, so it may not get the attention because there's no real dollar sign attached to it right now. Will it get kind of swept aside from others?
Or
this is one where you're determined to see. What do you need to see come out of the session to be successful in that regard?
Yeah, no, and we're what's so positive about this whole year is we have broad agreement. Again, both sides of the aisle, both in the Senate and in the House, in our office, in the administration, all agencies. And we're making sure that we're not approaching this in a stovepipe manner, that we're all working together, that it because it cuts across multiple departments and agencies.
You've made the assessment, what, nine agencies? I mean, billions of dollars.
So
this is about...
Yeah, and multiple programs. So we're not just doing the assessment of what works and what doesn't, so we're not spilling resources, so that we're not shorting a program that could work for more at-risk kids in high schools or middle schools. We want to make sure that we look at this whole continuum that from the very start, from pre-K, K through 12, post-secondary education, and make sure that that's all aligned as we go forward, and all the programs are as well. And so the good news is, the good news, bad news, the good news is, as I mentioned in the speech, we've got over 700,000 Hoosiers that went to college and didn't finish, but they want to. They want to get their degree. We've got over 475,000 Hoosiers that don't have a high school diploma, but want to, or want to get a job to double or triple their salary. And the good news is the jobs are there, waiting.
You said 85,000 right now, unfilled in the past year at least.
So think about it this way. 85,000 unfilled jobs right now, plus the 30,000 new jobs that are coming on this year, next year, the year after.
35,000 next year is what you said. Well, I'm going to hold you that extra 5,000.
Yeah, 30,000.
You got 30,000 this year, but you set up ambitious goals.
Yeah, so now we're talking 65,000 at the end of this year, plus over the next decade, layer on top of that, the million jobs due to all the new jobs that will be created in the baby boomers. So we got a lot of skilling up to do. And we have the Hoosiers. We have the exact cohort to skill up. So how do we connect people to their opportunity? And that's what we're all about right now, is lighten up that path.
And you did have some, you had some specific numbers about X number of jobs. Yeah. Other things, you talked about more opioid treatment centers, you know, from 18 to 27, so people don't have to drive as far.
Yep.
You had a lot of specifics. Are you worried that when you put those many specifics out there that they could come back to haunt?
No, I think it keeps I think that's good pressure. And I think that we have to set the bar high. We have to. That's what taking this thing to the next level is all about. And so I want, as I said at the very outset, I want folks who are honest and humble, but hungry, and hungry to improve. And that's the whole point of our jobs.
Well, time has gone by very quickly. We've scratched the surface, and you're off the hook. I didn't get a chance now to. You're saved by the bell. The toughest question of all about SAES Firefly being the state insect. I know
it's going to happen.
I know.
It's not going to be the hardest thing we do this year.
All right, but you're convinced. Can you take that to the bank?
We're going
to
deliver.
The SAES Firefly lobby.
Don't get
will
in
be
the way of these kids. They've been working on it for 4 years.
Fair
I'm
enough.
With them.
Eric Holcomb, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate
thank
that.
You.
Again, my guest has been, as I just suggested, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb, a first-term Republican. Reading, writing, and computer science. Indiana's workforce development starts in the classroom on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And from one chief executive to another. Time now for our weekly visit with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannah News Service. You're CEO of that operation. So, yeah, you qualify.
I've got the same suit as the governor today.
Give me your assessment of the state of the state. some people found trouble criticizing it because a lot of it is, like, joked with the governor. It was sort of apple pie and brotherhood.
Yeah, the Democrats kind of criticized him for not going far enough and not being bold enough, but they really didn't criticize the content. And it was interesting, too, because, you know, this governor isn't a guy who came into office as a big inspirational figure, but I think that in a quiet and different way, you know, his speech the other night and his general performance is a little bit more inspiring than you might expect. And I think that that's something that a lot of legislators took away from that speech. You know, he went through and delivered an address that not only talked about, you know, our aspirations, but also talked about some of the problems that we've got, some of the faults. And he was brutally honest about addressing some of those. But at the same time, you know, he did the moonshot thing, too, by saying, you know, we want to be the best in the Midwest in terms of defeating the infant mortality problem by 2024. So it was almost like a, you know, one of those football coach halftime quasi-inspirational speeches in that he said, you know, we're moving the ball, but now we've got to get it across the goal line in a couple of places, and it may be worth, you know, trying that big, long Hail Mary pass.
He talked about a fourth water port. He talked about, you know, air service. He talked about making government work. He even talked about starting the process of fixing Indiana's aging water infrastructure. I mean, these are not the kind of things you put on campaign banners and see breathless commercials about water infrastructure. I mean, is he messaging that he is serious about governance?
Oh, absolutely. And he, even more importantly, he's serious about a long-term focus. You know, he's talked about, you know, from the campaign on, how he doesn't want to look at things on a short-term basis, because to him, you know, short-term now is almost a decade. He wants to see where Indiana should be in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and then develop plans for those kinds of things. I think that's the basis of the workforce development, career development, and tying the skills issue into the workforce of the future thing that you heard from him on Tuesday night's State of the State address. He really wants that long-term focus on everything.
So he comes out of this session with a thumbs up or thumbs down, do you think? What's the conventional wisdom?
Well, I think that
you're here to predict the future, after all. Come
yeah. On. Yeah, we made an agreement years ago not to say, well, it remains to be seen, John. But yeah, I think that he's in pretty good shape. He's not asking for a lot of ambitious kinds of things, and he's set some goals, and a lot of those goals are a little bit further in the future, but I think he's going to end up with the pathway to that future from this session.
Pathway, so to speak, pun intended. All right, Ed, thank you very much for your insight. Greatly appreciate it. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, my colleague Ed Feigenbaum, and this show's longtime producer, Shannon Cagle-Dawson, who unfortunately is leaving us to begin an exciting new career in the field of education administration, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more on the 2018 legislative session. Until next week, take care.
Purdue researchers are advancing manufacturing industries by developing 3D additive methods, leading through innovation and job creation. Purdue Research Foundation. Contact innovation at prf.org.